Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, con season is approaching us, and I don't mean like the big fancy conventions that we won't be going to. What I mean is our small, tiny Ann Arbor-based convention that we run for folks who are connected with Roll for Topic.
Yeah, the con around which the hobby truly.
Truly, yes. Yeah, watch out, Gen Con. yeah, we've come to start to schedule it like away from Gen Con because we realized it was just like, you know, you can't fight that giant. So for those who are listening who are not in the Discord, but also the sort of person who's going to come to the convention. So the date for that is going to be September 19th. And again, we'll be meeting in Ann Arbor. And I'm super excited for it, right? This is year number 6 that we're doing this, which doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, bonkers. Mm-hmm. And would you say, if you're interested, the way to continue down that path is to reach out to you or me?
Yep. Okay. Yep. You just reach out directly to us. You know, we're a small operation. Yeah. So if you're interested and you're not already in like kind of the places that we're typically announcing this, just reach out to us. I think our emails are on the website and stuff like that. But yeah. So, anyway, I'm super excited. And what I'm kind of most excited about, we wanted to kind of like talk about a bit more on the air, is that we picked the theme as of like 12 hours ago.
Yeah.
Or so. Yeah. For the con, which is really great. So I want to talk a little bit about the thought process that went into it, and then we'll do a grand reveal of what the theme is.
Yeah. How would you feel about just walking us through the themes of the last couple cons?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think all of the cons except the first one had a theme. Is that right?
Yeah. The first one did not have one because we were just like, I mean, like, what are we doing here? You know, like, we didn't even know this hotel room
at this time. And
that was just like in a hotel. We found a conference room, and rented it out for the day. But yeah. So 2021 was no theme. And then the next one was White Whale, then Secrets, One Last Score. And then last year was And My Axe.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun ones. So the White Whale one was sort of an idea of like, hey, you know, run some games that are just sort of your white whales that you've been like, oh, I really want to run this. And I think a couple of people really gravitated towards that and ran some stuff there that they had just been wanting to for a while. And then the other ones, when we're thinking about the theme, we're always trying to just like, I mean, now that we've kind of like figured out how this can interact with the con, we're thinking about like, how can we give something that's like a little nugget of like, oh, that gets my brain going in a certain way. Yeah. So when we announced last year for And My Axe, like immediately a couple of people were just like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to run now. Like, you know, which is really what we're going for with that.
Yeah. Right? And to clarify, the theme is, it's really the intent of the theme is that people running games at the con use it as inspiration or idea fuel. Right. And we don't want to lock you into a genre. Like, we don't want a theme that makes you feel like you have to run cyberpunk or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's gotta be a theme that's like, it can be a theme that can be applied to almost any like kind of setting or game. It's more like an attitude than like a theme. Is that right?
Yeah. Like an attitude or just like something that's like, I don't know. Like if you're like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. It's like, well, there's a theme there, right? Like, you know, take it or leave it if you want. But we don't want to be too prescriptive with it. And the fact it's not like, you know, oops, all D&D, right? Like that's
That might be a good theme for like next year.
I've thought about it. Yeah. And like, I think a couple of the when we were doing our brainstorming on stuff, and just to be clear, we're not going to read out all of like our brainstormed ideas, but like a couple of them were very much like really, you should just run D&D for this. Yeah. But yeah,
The people that attend, I do think, you know, one of these years we could play with something like that, like oops, all Shadowrun or something like that, and people would probably have a blast with it.
I think they would. I mean, yeah, typically people have a lot of fun at this con. So what we, you know, kind of what we do is usually it's like, okay, we pick the date, like, oh no, we need to come up with a theme. So Andy and I just like send stuff back and forth. But like, I think Andy, you brought up something that I think was really good about making sure that we were kind of tuning towards the abstract a little bit there. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause like, I think a handful of my initial ideas were, I think kind of lock us in too much of that idea. Anyway, so we went back and forth, and like really kind of what it came down to is like, once we had a list of the final ideas that we liked, I just, while I was cooking dinner yesterday, I just was in the kitchen by myself, just like reading these out loud, saying like, you know, Roll for Topic Con 2026. And then whatever the sample theme was one just like emerged. So anyway, so without further ado, our theme this year is going to be Wizard City. And the reason it is Wizard City is because as I was reading through that list, every time I said it, I just giggled. It's like, yeah. Yeah. So it'll be Roll for Topicon 2026, Wizard City. Yeah. So we're going to find out exactly what that means, as we go on. But I think I like the concept quite a bit of just like a city full of wizards and like what kind of nonsense would get up to, you get up to yes. in there. Yeah. So some people, of course, are going to like love that. Some other people are going to be like, well, I'm not doing anything with that.
That's totally right. Fine. Yeah. Look, I'm just running Marvel superheroes.
Okay? Yeah. I'm just running. Yeah. You can you say what you want, but I'm not changing that. Yeah. Anything. Yeah, so I think that's gonna be super cool. You know, we always, you know, we try to do some like some art and stuff related to the con. Yeah, so I'm excited. I think whatever artists we get, we can rope into helping us this year, I think is gonna like like.
Yeah, we've been blessed in the last couple of years with some artists that really volunteered their talents to bring the theme to life, which is really delightful.
Yeah.
Last year we had some like And My Axe t-shirts that I yes. still smile when I think about them. So
yeah. Yes. Yeah. I wear mine pretty regularly. Yeah. So Claire had done the art on that. And like, I mean, she's a phenomenal artist, but every time I wear that out in public, people are just like, what is going on with this? I need to know more. It's really great. My kids love it too. They're always like, yeah, Dad, wear the pink shirt. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So anyway, so Wizard City is our theme. Yeah. So get excited about that again, September 19th, in Ann Arbor. And yeah, reach out if you want more details on that. I'm super excited. This year feels like we sort of know a little bit what we're doing, which is scary in that it makes me think that maybe we think we're, I don't know. I think we know more than we do. Right. But yeah, I think it'll be.
It means this is the year everything will go wrong. Is
yeah,
the year,
yeah.
Is
what you're saying, and so. You know what? That's fine, right? Like as GMs, we sort of embrace the chaos. So we will continue to embrace the chaos. Right, yeah. Okay. So we don't want to belabor that too much, but yeah, I just wanted to get that out. And then So we will be announcing in various places date and theme. Week.
Yeah, that sounds great. Mm. I feel like a squadron of like P-38s just flew over my house.
Oh, really?
At an altitude of like 75 feet.
So, that's great.
I hope the listeners enjoyed the air show.
Yeah.
So, hey, Chris, if we're done chatting convention stuff, I have a question for you. It's kind of a follow-up. So in the last episode or two, we talked memorably about what you were going to do with your big, juicy, noble knight coupon that you, or store credit that you had.
Yeah.
And I am led to believe that at least one of the things you procured from that was a copy of T1, The Village of Hamlet.
Yes.
An AD&D module. Mm-hmm. And I am even further led to believe that you are planning a game where mm-hmm. you will run a bunch of hapless adventurers, maybe your neighbors, through a genuinely old school adventure. So we talked a little bit about that last time. I don't want to just rehash our discussion, but now you've had time to read through the whole module and start thinking about how you're going to make it happen at the table. Do you want to give us like an update on what's going on there and what's on your mind?
Yeah. So I did finish. Yeah. I finished reading it. I don't even remember. If it was it last episode? Was it last episode? Was it two? I don't know. Anyway, but like, yeah, so I finished reading through it. And it was a delightful read just in general. Right. I mean, I think like, you know, same thing, you know, go find that episode if you want to hear more about it. But like, you know, it just is like, it's kind of like, it's crunchy in ways that are very much like crunchy that like the sort of crunch that Gygax clearly liked. Right. Again, like everybody sort of has a list of all the, you know, the jewels and the gold they have and where it's secreted away and all that sort of stuff too. But it's also just like, it's kind of messy in a way that like, you know, there's a major NPC in that I'm not going to bring up because I think people who are listening to this might be playing in it too. There's like a major NPC that like doesn't get introduced or mentioned until like basically like the last page of the module.
Yeah.
The module to the point where like, I mean, it's like, this is the sort of person, like, I mean, anyone who's reading this thing, I think is going to like say like, well, I'm going to introduce this person like, you know, really early or like whatever, right? It's going to be like, this is going to be like a core sort of part of this adventure. And it's just like really just, it feels like an afterthought, but it's very clearly not an afterthought, right? Yeah. You know, like this person is like sort of behind some stuff too. Yeah. So reading it was really fun because it's like, you know, it felt like this process of discovery in that like as it was written, it really feels like when you're reading it, like you're sort of reading through how a player might engage and come across these things as they're, you know, they're working through mm-hmm. the module. You know, I'm thinking as like a GM, if you hadn't read ahead on this one, like it would also be a surprise to you, And I think that must have been intentional or maybe not, but like, you know, it's definitely not how like I would structure this. I was writing it up. But like, I mean, I really appreciate it, too, just for, you know, kind of what it is and like where it's at and in the hobby. Again, like I think if you wrote this modern day and we're like doing an editing pass on it, you'd be like, oh, well, we need to pull some of this information out in different ways and like kind of structure it differently. But like, this is very much just a reflection of how Gygax is thinking about his modules.
And, you know, a modern version of it would have an introductory section in the beginning where it's like, hey, here's like the three acts of this adventure and here's the through lines, and I'm just curious, as a GM, I mean, could you see yourself not reading this in advance at the table, but just like showing up as the GM at the table, and when the players say we're gonna go into hex S3,
yeah,
then like you looked at that and read it for the first time, like could you do that as a GM? Would that be fun or would that be a nightmare?
I think that would be, there'd be a lot of downtime at the table, I think, right? And like, that's something that I, you know, like, I don't know if we've really talked about this, but like, for me, that is not fun, right? That moment where it's like, you know, everybody's sort of waiting for you to process information is like, you know, torturous, yeah. You know, and like this happens a lot, I think, in board games. I think like anybody who's listening to this podcast is also the person that has to explain board games to other people, right? Like, it's just like there, you fill that role of the rules master as well. Right. So like, of, you know, you're playing some sort of board game and someone's like, well, how does this work? And like, you're the one who has to go flip through the book to like find the real answer. Like I, you know, I embrace that I am that person, but I also really don't like that feeling of like everybody sort of waiting for you to figure out enough context and figure out what's going on enough to be able to say like, okay, like this is how we're going to play the game. Right. So I think like sitting down to play this module without having read it ahead of time, I think would be not a fun experience for me personally. I also don't know, like, is that just, was the intent for these modules to be played that way, like you just sit down and then as you're running across a different room, like you give your GM a little bit of time to read ahead.
I can't speak to this definitively. I will say that when I was first running games, and I think I ran my first game of AD&D, I would have been in like junior high, probably mm-hmm. seventh grade, maybe. It definitely there. I mean, again, I think it's hard to remember that without the internet, it wasn't incredibly obvious like how you were supposed to be running games. I remember it wasn't until I got to college and I saw other people running games that I was like, oh, phew, I'm doing it right. Because I often, as like a young GM, was like, am I doing this right? Because there's no actual plays on the internet to go and look up. There's no forums to like banter about how a game should be run. So I will say that when I was running my first games, it was very much like my cousin would be like, hey, we want to run this module. And he would shove it into my hands. And then we would sit down and 2 minutes later we were playing the module. And it very much was like, we're going to go south down this street. And I would be like, okay, you wind up at Chex's book, you know, the blacksmith shop. A burly blacksmith is like behind the counter. So I'm not saying that that was like the best or the purest way to play, but I do think that without a really clear, when the hobby was pretty niche, when there was no mass media embrace of like how this was supposed to look, I do think there, like, you probably get a really wide variety in how people ran the game. And I would venture to guess it leaned quite heavily more into like this game is going to be a surprise for the GM at the same time it's a surprise for the player's approach. So if you are like an old person like me and listening to this podcast and you have a same or different experience, I'd actually love to hear about it. So what do you think about that, Chris? Does that like just terrify you? Could you see that working? Like, can you picture yourself doing that?
I mean, I guess I could picture myself doing it. I think it would take a level of familiarity with how these things, like with how these modules themselves are structured. like a little bit more, maybe like, you know, like I think I could do it, you know, if I decided to run, you know, like all the AD&D modules or something like that, you know, so like really got
I'm sensing you're about to commit to doing that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to like say it out loud because, you know, that'll curse me, but of course that's what right. I'm going to do. You know, got to start somewhere. But yeah, but it's like, okay. So, I mean, I think if there was more familiarity for me about like, I mean, even the rules or stuff like that, I could probably maybe get to that point. But like, the thing that I got mostly from reading through like the totality of Village of Hamlet is like there's some cool stuff in there that I want to seed in earlier that I would not have gotten to, you know, like I wouldn't have been able to know about, you know, until then. Cause like my style is very much like, you know, prep, but then at the table, I'm just like, you know, trying to surprise myself as well with, you know, like what details I add or, you know, bring in and stuff. So like I might have written notes and like it's sort of like I will very quickly go off script from those notes, and I'm comfortable doing that too. And that's really, I mean, for me, that's more like where the fun is for stuff. Maybe it's like terrible for everybody else, but that's what I like. So I mean, I think, you know, for me it's like, you know, even doing like a cursory first read would be helpful, and then going back to do it, I don't know, to like to play it. And then, you know, as people are going to places, it's like, oh, I got to refresh my memory about like, you know, what does that room look like? Who's in that room? That sort of stuff.
Yeah. There's, I have to say, I do also sometimes think like we lose sight of the fact that this is really, this is really a kid's game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Guy Gax was not a kid, and I understand that he was in war game circles and stuff that were not children, but I would venture to guess, you know, the vast majority of people playing Module T1 were like kids, right?
Yeah.
And when you're a kid, I mean, at the time that it came out, when you're a kid, I mean, when you're a kid, I just didn't really think like I need to read this and plot out and try to anticipate where they'll go.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was, I think, just more of a willingness to like, this will be like messy and kind of dumb, mm-hmm. but it's like, this is how we are going to play. This is what we're doing. Like we're all playing D&D and we all know it's going to be messy and dumb because we're all 14 years old and no one has read the module and you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I do sometimes find myself wishing I could recapture a little bit of that. And it's a self-serving desire. Because what is my big problem now? What has tripped me up as GM more than anything else, like the last 5 or 10 years of my life? It's like the pressure of prep.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, I can't run anything these days without spending a month like nervously stressing about it and rereading it and taking notes and trying to anticipate what's going to happen. And with this sense of like, I'm having these like busy adults over. I need to make this worth their while, mm-hmm. et cetera. Like when you're a kid, who cares if your friends if like it's not the best afternoon of their life, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're going to hang out with each other anyway. If you weren't playing D&D, you'd be sitting around playing Goonies 2 on the NES, right?
Yeah. Like, so, anyway. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, would you like, is that thought appealing to you? Like if I got you together for some sort of like, you know, gaming weekend or at the con, I just like handed you, you know, whatever, Village of Hamlet or like, you know, one of these other ones and just said like, just run it. Like, would you freeze and then would something kick in? Or if it was just, you know, like what would the setting have to be for you to be comfortable with like, oh, I'm just going to like, we're just going to like open it up together and figure it out as we go.
I don't know. All I can say is like, so I have quite a few books in my house that are what you describe. They're intended to be, I mean, you maybe skim them before you run them, but you know, I have a lot of like what you might call old school products, and they are very much written with less of that mentality of like, here's your adventure path plot you're going to go through, and here's the mm-hmm. romantic plot line, and be sure to seed the event, you know, be sure to get the pacing right and stuff like that. I have a lot of stuff that's like tries to emulate that old school, like, okay, now you're in Hex H3,
mm-hmm.
here's the text to read, but I don't just trust myself not to want to try and overthink it and start thinking like, you know, what would be really fun for my group is if I made sure they encountered this guy here and then later he came back and it was a big surprise. And then, you know what I mean? It's not a problem with the game. It's like I think I trip myself up.
Okay. So here's maybe a probing question. When you prep, how often do you throw away an idea for a different idea? If that makes sense, right? So like you just said, like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, I introduced this guy and then have him come back? How often do you come up with ideas like that and then say like, oh, actually, I don't want to do that, right? Or is it, right? Because like, I mean, that to me sort of is the clue of like, if you, you know, like shortening that distance of like idea to just playing it, right? Like, I mean, I think that's what you're sort of getting at with like how you used to play. It's just like, oh, you just had the idea, you then just play it, right? Yeah. Versus like, is it super important that it's written down ahead of time, you know, and then like you do, cause like there's some sort of like, I don't know, iteration that's happening when you're like coming up with an idea.
Well, okay. That's a great question. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I can really honestly answer it because it's been a while since I've run a game that leans into that. Like, so like one issue I have is that I mean, a lot of the role-playing I love to do and the role-playing I've done most heavily in the last 5 years of my life has been like what you might call like a mystery or an investigation type stuff. It's mm-hmm. either been like Call of Cthulhu, or it's been something like Alien where it's kind of like an investigation. And in like a Call of Cthulhu game, it is kind of important to know like where the clues are. And if I do fail to introduce a clue early on or make that possible for the players to find it, I can screw things up. Mm-hmm. You know, we can hit a wall like later on. So yeah. I speak of this mostly as kind of like a former D&D GM, you know, who's maybe pining for what I perceive maybe falsely as like the lower pressure of running like a D&D location-based adventure. Because most of what I do now, you know, I have to make like a flowchart of scenes and yes, and what the critical things are that I need to convey in each scene, and how does this scene connect? Like, you know, what are these are good things. I'm not criticizing these things. These are smart things written by smart people who have tried to wrap their head around like how do you tell role playing experiences, you know, that feel more like investigations or mysteries or well paced and well plotted movies and stuff. But so this is me, like, I think what this is me being a little jealous that you're running T1 or thinking of running T1, and that you might have that luxury of like not caring quite so much.
Yes.
About, did they get all the info they need, and do they have enough to move on to scene 3, or do I need to quickly improv a different way for the villain to reveal themselves? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. Cause like, even as I'm prepping, like, you know, prepping this, and to be clear, like, you know, the prep so far is like, I've read through it. I've got like, you know, a handful of notes and then some ideas and stuff. It's not too exhaustive, but like, I'm treating it more gently than I might even like a 5e. Like if this had been converted to like a system that I'm more familiar with or whatever, like I think I might treat it with more like importance than the source material is demanding of me. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Cause I think you're right on, like, the intent of this really is just like, oh, we'll just play it and see what happens. Right. It's like, you know, it's not really like a, you know, oh, to really maximize your enjoyment of this, you got to like make sure that these things happen. But yeah. Like, for all I know, and I'm open to this idea, we get to the village of Hamlet and they come up with some other idea. Right. And it's like, okay, like let's do that other idea. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I want to sort of be open to that, you know, open to that experience as well. I think, like, you know, the more we're talking about this, the more I'm sort of drawn to, like, you know, like, what if we could do a gaming weekend or a con slot that is very much just like trying to really specifically trying to recapture that sense of like, we're just going to figure this out together.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, you don't even know what module you're playing, you know, like whatever, like I buy it for the table, you know, and then like it shows up the day of the con and then we just play it right there. Like, I mean, it's like that. I don't know. Like, I mean, I think that it's maybe closer to the intent of the game. I think there is a level of, again, the sort of people who are attracted to playing tabletop games, maybe these days, there's a level of like mastery that I think is fun to get to explore there too. Of like, oh, like I have, like, you know, I have sort of more mastery over the, whatever, the content or like the rules or whatnot, that I think, professional white collar adults sort of like get to do this in their job, and so they like to do it in their hobbies. Yeah. Hobbies too. Whereas like, it's not, you know, again, the game probably was never written, or like with the intent of like, oh, everybody's got to be, you know, 100% up on the rules. Maybe the GM, like, I think Gygax probably assumed that, everybody was hanging on every word of his and all that. But like, you know, for the players, it's like, yeah, sure. Like you're just, your buddies get together and you play. So that was pretty rambling, but I mean, I think I like that idea quite a bit of like, you know, treat the source material with the intent that it was written and that like, yeah, just open it up and play. And like, it's okay if there's some dead air or like, you're like, oh, actually it would have been more interesting if, you know, you met this person, whatever, 15 minutes ago, but we're meeting them now. So it's fine.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I didn't foreshadow that this person was going to, you know, so I will say the most recent time I had an experience, and it was a blissful one of this kind of like gaming that I fantasize about. It was probably 3 or 4 years ago running Twilight 2000 at RFTCon. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I ran it twice. The second time it didn't really click. The first time though, something really magic happened. And when I think back about it, and I've had players from that first Twilight 2000 game say that was something special. Like I would play that more with you. And, you know, and it's funny because when I think back that time, it was kind of a disaster. Like I showed up at the con and I had left all the like pre-generated PCs at home, like hours away. And so we wasted like a third of the game time, like hastily going through the character creation rules, which I specifically was like, I don't want us getting bogged down in this, so I'm going to make everyone a pre-gen. But here we are, it's like an hour into the game slot. I'm trying to explain the encumbrance rules to people. You know, it's just like a dumb mess. And I in retrospect, I have come to think that like the oh my gosh, we have to just like cobble something together vibe actually contributed and made it a better game. Mm-hmm. And then we started playing that game and I didn't have any adventure planned. In that game, you just draw like a card from a deck of cards and you look at that entry in the rule book and it tells you what they find. Mm-hmm. And it was something like quite special. Like it worked really well. That was the game. Like I think we saw some photos of it later and like everyone at the game was like standing up, like hunched over the table. Yeah. Like it was just like a really magic moment. So I say that not to boast about like what a good game that was, but to just kind of think that like that kind of came together because I screwed up and ended up not having the stuff I had prepared and had to wing it even more than I had been expecting that we would mostly wing the game, but I had to wing it even more than planned. And like, maybe that's what needs to happen at the next, you know, the next time I run D&D or something like that. Maybe I need to have forgotten the module at home. Right.
Yeah. I never do it for memory. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I recall that game. Like I didn't play in that game, but I recall very vividly turning around at one point and seeing, like you said, all your players were standing up and just like everybody looked like they were more engaged than they've ever been engaged in a game right, before. Right,
yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't like, okay, everybody stand up. You got to stretch your legs. It was like, just like a reaction to what was happening at the table was like, everybody was standing. Right. And I think like, you know, yeah, like it's very cool. I mean, it makes me wonder like, what a, you know, like that experience sticks out to you. And like, we've talked about it before. And like, you know, it's something I think is kind of a core gaming memory for you and for the rest of your life. It's like, yeah. Like, I mean, is there it sounds a little bit like you're sort of chasing that high again, but I mean, do you thinking about it and talking about it, is it like, is that something that you want to try to go chase after? Or is it just like that was like, I don't know, like, you know, maybe I should think about that next time. Or is it like, no, actually, like, you know, as we're talking about it, like, I need to go do that.
I'd really like to get to that high again. And I do think about it. I just don't have, but the challenge is, you know, that was a one shot game. Mm-hmm. And I just know myself very well. I know how hard it is for me to sustain campaigns, like as the GM. Just earlier this year, I had to call off a campaign due to just some real life issues or whatever. And it was like a blow to my gut. Like, yeah. I just can't keep a game running. Like, you know, it's like, and so I would just worry that like, if I started playing that every week, would I start thinking like, oh, you know, what would be cool is if I seed this idea here and then later this guy is a recurring villain.
Yeah.
And this romantic interest I'll introduce over here and stuff like that. I just, I'm way overthinking this, and I get it. I'm kind of rolling my eyes at myself as I hear the words coming out of my mouth. But at the same time, I do think that part of the magic was it was like just we're never doing this again. Like, and like nothing is planned, and we've just got a couple hours to like do something with this set of toys we have in front of us at the table. Like, and that just worked. So
I mean, there's something to that. Yeah, it's like that that like drive it like you stole it sort of mentality of like, yeah, like this is, you know, this is not, I don't know, like this is something that I'm enjoying in the moment and not like really like, you know, don't need to protect it or like, you know, protect it in any way. Cause it is like, it's ephemeral. Like it's always going to be ephemeral, right? Like, you know, gaming, and it's like, it's mostly going to live in your memory, right? Like you're not like producing some sort of thing that you can go back and look at, like, you know, right. We have a picture from it and the memories of your players and of you of that game. Right. And it's like, it's very special. And I've talked to those people individually too. Like, you know, they're our friends and stuff. And it's like, yeah, they also think very highly of that experience. And I should say, like, I played in your second game. That was also really enjoyable. I do think about that one, the second one of that. Yeah. But it's like, yeah, I mean, I don't think you admitted it too. Like it didn't raise to that height of like, you know, oh, we're like all standing, you know, like,
yeah,
but
yeah.
it was still very fun. But like, anyway, so all that to say, like, you know, we have this like ephemeral, like you play it and then it's sort of gone other than your memory and stuff. And like, I think there is a sense of like, oh, but if I can wrest some control about this, I can make it an even better one.
Yeah.
But I think what we often find, and I think what most GMs find, is like, yes, there is some cool stuff about like sticking the landing of like, you know, like, oh, I had this idea and it got to play out over 10 or 15 sessions or something like that. And like, we all had this experience, but it's like, even in those situations, it's always like the little stuff that like you really remember. That's like, oh, that was a fun aside that happened. Someone said a funny joke, or like, you know, like that was a cool action sequence or whatever that like emerges out of that gameplay.
So how many times have you, like, in D&D, it is kind of like futile to some extent, like trying to plan the stuff out or anticipate, like, because like how many times in D&D has your great plan like not worked out that great, but instead this like random kobold that they befriended that you came up with the name like on the fly, and then that is, if you were to ask the players, all they would remember from that whole campaign is how much fun they had with their pet kobold that they adopted in session three or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah.
So I want to say about Twilight 2000. So you know what? Like the second time I ran that, you know what? Like I had to fight myself not to do. Mm. I had to fight myself really hard not to stack the encounter deck.
Really?
Like, because like that's where my brain like wants to go, even though my brain knows it won't make it better. My brain is like, well, but like, what if they draw this really out there encounter that like would that like seem that makes no sense, it doesn't flow, it doesn't fit with like anything else, like, and so I didn't stack the deck, but like that's where my brain, you know, that's like the sabotage starts to creep in, and like it feels so good because you're like, well, I'm just, well, if I just take out a couple of these encounters that I don't think would make any sense or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like it's just like a dangerous path you're going down, right? It's like the best of intentions.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's I was just talking with a coworker about Brindlewood Bay. Right. And like, that is a game that is entirely based around the idea of like, you know, don't have a foregone conclusion in front of you. And it's like, it is freeing that the game is so direct and like purposeful about that, because it really removes a lot of that burden from you. Like not it removes your ability to kind of like try to massage a nice ending out of something, and like really puts it back on the players to like just say like, well, how do all these things connect? And like, there's always a way to make it work. And I think people just in general are great at finding those patterns and really delight in making those connections anyway. Yeah. So like, you know, in Twilight 2000 or whatever, it's like, you know, you draw a card and it's like, oh, I don't know, like there's a broken down tank in this one. And then the next one you draw is like, I don't know, whatever. There's like a broken down helicopter. And then the next one is a broken down plane, whatever that is. Right. It's just like, okay, like you're going to weave a story together about like what happened there, regardless of what it is. So like, I don't know. It's, we do fight our own best interests there, in trying to wrest that control.
Yeah.
Control.
Or maybe nobody else does. And it's just that I'm neurotic.
I don't know. I mean, I do think it might be a particular malady of the sorts of, like games and gamers that we hang out with of like, it's like this kind of like story gamer mentality, I think does lend itself to that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think maybe if we were more like min maxers, maybe then it's like, well, you gotta like let go of control of getting your perfect build done, you know, instead of like thinking about the story. But yeah, I think there's something to that. I thought. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, we need to wrap up here. It's been good discussing. I hope that was interesting.
Do you
have any other business to cover?
The only other thing I wanted to mention is, so like I did put an order in at Noble Knight for a couple things. So I'd been reading The Village of Hamlet, the PDF version, but that I'd found somewhere. So I put an order in for The Village of Hamlet, the second printing of it. So this is the pastel version. So this is like, before. So if you look at it, there's like seven or eight printings from the AD&D era. At some point, fourth or fifth printing, they switched over to this like green cover one. But this is like the old pastel one with just like amazing artwork of this like fantasy figure, like knight having with a mace or a sword or something. It's really cool.
That sounds
great. So I have that one coming. I'm also excited, like, you know, again, we had talked about like, you know, how that all the extra like little bits that people have like have written in, you know, the margins and stuff in books is like our favorite. So I did go for one that like is not in perfect condition. So I'm hoping we'll have some of that.
Do you have the strength to write your own notes in the margin?
I am going to have the strength to do it. I'm committed to that. And then I also ordered the Temple of Elemental Evil. So this is the one that combines T1 through 4.
Oh, hey, fantastic. Yeah, I know that one pretty well, so yeah. I'd like to visit that with you in the future. So.
Yeah, I think you had mentioned it as like a, you know, maybe read it at least just so you kind of have a sense of like where this thing can go. So I think my hope is by reading that I will understand a little bit more. Again, right, talking about prep, like, you know, I'll have like a little bit more of an idea of like, oh, this is where all this stuff could head. Not with the intention of we're going to run it, but just like to have some ideas of like, this is the surrounding area, this is what the temple looks like and all that. So,
well, there's some good writing online if you poke around on some blogs about how the temple came about. It came about it came about quite a bit after Village of Hamlet mm-hmm. basically committed that there was going to be like a Temple of Elemental Evil. And then when it came out, I think the rest of the series, I don't think it was written directly by Gygax. And it was just like an interesting thing where Village of Hamlet had been out there long enough that everyone had like created their idea of what they needed the Temple of Elemental Evil to be. And it wasn't what a lot of people wanted. And I think that makes for an interesting story in retrospect, maybe a frustrating one if you were buying it at the time, but like,
yeah, that's interesting. Well, yeah,
here, can I share, just thinking of marking up stuff in the margins, maybe I've shared this anecdote before. I was at Gen Con once, and I was playing in a game of Hackmaster. This is Hackmaster fourth edition. This is a glorious parody of AD&D. And one of the things about, I was in a tournament or something like that. Anyway, everyone got a copy of the core rules, like as part of being in the tournament or whatever it was. And at the beginning, it was time to make characters. And the GM was like, okay, everyone, if you like flip to the back of your rule book and just tear out the character sheet. And
absolutely not.
I almost had a heart attack. It's not like perforated like you're supposed to tear it out, and even if you were, I mean obviously you shouldn't, right?
Yeah
It was just like, why would you do it? wreck the binding of your book by like just tear the like four photocopying character sheet out of the back. Like, it was an eye-opening.
Oh my goodness.
I think about that sometime, and I think there was like a lesson in there that I didn't learn at the time that I want to learn.
This is like people who like throw away the boxes to their board games. They put them in a different box, like or a different like setup, because like they want to save space or whatever. It's like, I don't care if that is like whatever, some like 50th printing of Monopoly. Like, I'm never going to throw away a box to a board game. Like, yeah, that is the, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. Well, we should wrap it up there, but, okay. Yeah. So this has been Roll for Topic. Yeah. Really thank you for listening. You can find us on gmdiscussions.com. I don't think we say that enough if you've somehow found this,
right? Yeah. Especially I don't think we ever say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably should. Yeah. So gmdiscussions.com is sort of the location of where this podcast is. And then, you know, there's some extra information. Like, you know,
I think there's some contact info there. And
yeah.
Stuff
too, contact info if you want to get in touch. Yeah. We loved hearing from people. Yeah. It's a delightful part of getting to do this podcast. Yeah. You can go catch, Andy, over on his other podcast, Zombie Strains, with, John Corey. Yeah. And producer Brad. And I think, did I see correctly that you had a guest for the first time? Recently, or is that an upcoming episode?
The episode hasn't aired, but yes, we will have our guests, and it's like a really juicy episode. Ooh, so that'll be in a couple of weeks, I think.
Nice. So. That's awesome. Okay. Well,
so there's time for you to quick listen to all 70 episodes to get caught up in time for that. So.
Yeah, that's great. I should say, I don't think I told you this, but I was telling some other dads on the playground. They were talking about movies or something. I was like, oh, you know, my friends have this, like, you know, this podcast about zombies, and they both were just like, what? And they like pulled their phones out to start looking for it right there. I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm doing street team marketing for Zombie Strains as well.
Thank you. Most of the people I tell about it, they do say what, but it's a very different tone of what. It's like a what? Like a,
yeah, yeah.
You're doing this. Why?
Like, yeah. And you, this is optional activity, and you,
is this a condition of your parole or something?
Yeah. They're paying you. yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. Again, I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
And remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.